So, Jeff, I think you're very well known in the industry as an activist, as an author, a researcher, and a leading voice in the cannabis legalization cause. And Jan, also an activist, and I think you're involved with Jeff in the running of Bud Buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining me today down in Brighton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So how did you first, let's start from the beginning, which is often sensible. How did you first get involved with cannabis?
Well, for me, it was back in 2000 when a very good friend of mine who has suffered with MS for a number of years, I knew she used cannabis to treat her MS and it helped her, but I'd never really paid any attention. And then I met her one day and she looked terrible. And she told me that her regular supplier of cannabis had been arrested by the police. She had to find a new supplier, and she'd been going round pubs in Liverpool just trying to score some weed. And she's in a wheelchair, very ill, and she was taken out to the car park with a guy who was going to sort her out with a quarter an ounce of weed. And he ended up pulling a knife on her, holding it to her throat, robbed her purse, so she never got any weed, obviously very traumatised. She didn't even report it to the police because she was scared that she'd get in trouble for trying to obtain some cannabis. So at the time I was thinking, well, that's terrible. She shouldn't be in that situation. And then it suddenly dawned on me, it's only a plant. How hard can it be to grow? So that was the first time I had a go at cultivation. And yep, within 6 months I was supplying my friend, helping her. And she was involved with the MS Society in Liverpool. So her friends then started asking, they are having the same problems over supply and quality. So it basically grew from that, and that was the start of Bud Buddies.
Amazing. All right. And I guess she found the cannabis was helpful to her condition?
Yeah, massively so. It helped with all her symptoms. She had a better quality of life with it than without it. And it was also less side effects than her prescribed medications like baclofen and other painkillers, etc., that she was prescribed. Mm. And she's still consuming cannabis for a medical condition, but these days, instead of smoking it, she's vaping it.
Okay, yeah, seems like it's definitely a healthier alternative, I think, from smoking. Mm. And Jan, what about yourself?
Well, I've always been a cannabis user in my adult life, and I realised the medicinal benefits of cannabis from my own experience, which made me kind of investigate the idea that, you know, cannabis as medicine. And the more I learned about cannabis as medicine, the more it moved me, and I felt I wanted to do something about it, you know, as much as I can do to change the situation in this country so that people don't suffer in the way that they are at the moment, you know. So basically that's what I did. Yeah.
And when was this, by the way, Jeff, when this first began?
This was back in 2000, so 18 years ago now.
18 years ago, wow.
Long time.
Okay, so I think it's been a long journey for you guys. So then if we fast forward to a much more recent time, I was down at the United Patients Alliance protest outside of Parliament several weeks ago, where the second reading of the cannabis rescheduling bill was unfortunately filibustered. I heard your good self got arrested on that day. So could you tell me a little bit about what happened?
Sure. First thing I'd like to say, it wasn't a UPA event. It was Paul Flynn asked people to attend Parliament and break the law.
And Paul Flynn, he's an MP, is he?
He's the MP. He's the MP who put forward the bill as a private member's bill. And All due respect to Paul, he was saying in Parliament what an unfair, unjust law it was. Him and his colleagues are the people who can change this law, and he invited people to come to Parliament and break the law, and that's what I did. I answered his call, and I got arrested for being in possession of cannabis oil with intent to supply it to the parents of a terminally ill child.
Sorry, I'm just letting that sink in for a moment. Because that's quite powerful. So yeah. You're at the event and you get arrested. Do they take you back to the police station? Then what happened?
I was arrested, searched, processed, put in the back of a police van, then taken to Charing Cross Police Station, where I was locked in a cell for 7 hours. And I was eventually interviewed by CID at 2 o'clock in the morning. And after an interview, I was processed, kicked out on the streets at 3:30 in the morning in the middle of London. Didn't have a clue where I was or how I was going to get back to my hotel, but I survived it. And it's not the first time I've been arrested. And the only way I can guarantee I will not be arrested again is never to break the law. But this is an unjust law and I can't respect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you get, what was the punishment? Did they give you a caution or anything like that? Or
no. I have been released pending further investigation. They took off me various different types of oils and extracts, which they've sent to a forensic lab to be tested. So when they get the results of them, I assume I'll be re-interviewed or charged.
Oh, great. Something to look forward to. Yeah.
Well, definitely.
And Jan, you were at this event as well. So yeah. How did things pan out from your perspective?
I thought the police acted it wasn't appropriate behaviour from the police. I thought they were very sensitive to what essentially was a harmless scenario. They treated Jeff and Callie. You know, Jeff was handcuffed. And Callie was brutally treated by the police. And I thought that was very poor behaviour on the police from the police officer's point of view. You know, they could have used discretion and they could have taken the matter in hand a lot more sensibly than they did. And I believe that the resulting upset of that day was primarily due to police behaviour, really. Yeah.
And that's an interesting one, because I suppose there would be an argument to say that the police are there to enforce the law. Cannabis is obviously a scheduled substance in the UK, unfortunately. So on one hand, they are there to enforce the law. Yeah. But on the other hand, it seems ludicrous that they would arrest a man that is providing medicine that has been shown to help so many people in so many different ways.
Well, the thing with police officers here in the UK is they all have the power of discretion. So it is their decision whether to arrest or not. And I asked every police officer I came in contact with at Charing Cross Police Station and the officers who arrested me, who was the victim of my crime? Could they identify the victim of my crime? And of course they couldn't. And a couple of police officers said something which really worries me, is that they don't have to identify a victim. The law's the law and they're there to enforce it. Now, to me, I don't want police officers who are going to obey a law without thinking about the morality and ethics behind it. I think that's very dangerous for us as a society. What if Parliament brings out another stupid law? For example, what if they bring out a law saying it's illegal to be Muslim? Then are police just going to arrest people for that? I don't want to live in a society where police officers just blindly follow the law without thinking about the laws that they're enforcing.
Absolutely. It's a scary road to go down.
Yeah. And they have a responsibility and a duty of care to society to use discretion, as Jeff says, and to enforce the law when it needs enforcing. I mean, how much money did that cost? That, you know, all the vans and the police dogs and the extra forces that came in, there must have been between 50 and 100 police officers at one point there. And how much money did that cost? All because someone was holding a plant and Jeff was in possession of medicine for a terminally ill child.
And Paul Flynn, he asked people to go there and break the law, and that's what we did. So yeah. If I am charged, I assume they're going to have to charge Paul Flynn for inciting me to go there to break the law in the first place.
And to get arrested. He actually said that as well.
Yeah.
To come and get arrested and see what happens.
So we're going to have to see how this one plays out quite closely. But rest assured, there are many, many people in the UK that are behind you because they know it's an incredibly just cause.
Yeah.
So you founded an organisation called Bud Buddies.
Yes.
When did you found this?
That was around about 2001 when we started. We developed around about 2002, 2003. In 2003, we had premises in Rhyl, North Wales, at the Beggar's Belief, which was the first private members cannabis club in the UK. And that's where we used to assist people medicinally with cannabis, supply it. And that was the start of Bud Buddies, really. In the last 5 years or so, we've concentrated on cancer and more serious illnesses. And the last few years, we've had to prioritise children. And at the moment, Bud Buddies are assisting the parents of over 100 terminally ill and seriously ill children here in the UK. And
wow.
It's ridiculous that we're in this situation.
Yeah. And so how do people come to you and find out about Bud Buddies?
Generally from internet, friends of friends mention it. Us appearing on TV, like the Kyle Files with Jeremy Kyle. That was an interesting program because on that, Jeremy was talking to one of the mothers that were assisting her, and she's giving cannabis oil to her sick son, and she's a serving police officer.
Wow.
So that highlights how stupid this law, when someone who's paid to enforce the law is actively breaking it, because when she first contacted me and we were talking over Skype, I was in Jamaica at the time, and she said she didn't know whether Bud Buddies would help her because of her job. So I said, well, what's your job? And she said, I'm a police officer. So I said, well, I've got one question. What are you first, a mother or a police officer? And of course, she said a mother. And we've been helping her for the last 12 months. But if her bosses find out what she's doing, she would lose her job, lose her pension. But more critically, she might even lose access to her son because social services would be involved. And that would mean he'd get no more access to cannabis oil. And 12 months ago, this child was given a month to live. Now, 12 months later, we are in a situation where half his tumours have disappeared and the other tumours in his body are shrinking and reducing. The biggest problem we have at the moment with him, or biggest challenge rather, is managing the symptoms and the damage that's been caused by the conventional therapies that he's had over the last few years, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, and various other very harmful treatments.
And the more I find out about these treatments, the more of a wormhole I go down. And it's, once I find out, you know, it's incredible, and I'm surprised that more people don't know. But then I've got to this point in my life having never questioned these things. And I think often, unfortunately, it's the people that find themselves in those unfortunate positions where themselves or a loved one becomes very, very ill. And they find that the pharmaceutical drugs that are prescribed with very long, scary names don't often cure or solve the problem. Or if they do to an extent, they often have very dangerous side effects.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I think what you're doing with Bud Buddies is really key to the whole movement, because this is purely anecdotal, but I mean, we all know that for decades there's been propaganda, misinformation from governments, from companies that don't want to see cannabis legalized. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to break people out of the mold of that, understandably, in a way. You go through society taught to not have critical thinking skills and not think about these things. So the area I'm seeing the biggest impact is the word of mouth. Mm. And the people that know someone that has gone through these and seen miraculous results, whether it's through alleviating pain or shrinking tumors. So I think the stuff you're doing out in the field is key to this.
It's not something we do through choice. We really feel that we have no choice, because sometimes I dread in the morning opening my emails, because there'll be an email there from someone who's contacted me through my website or Facebook saying, Jeff, you're our last hope. Our six-year-old child has only been given a month to live. We need cannabis oil, and can you help us? And how can you turn down someone who asks for your help like that? I there's no way I can refuse them.
Absolutely. And that must be incredibly taxing on you emotionally.
Very much so. Yeah, it is, isn't it, Jan?
Yes, it is. And one of the most taxing, if you like, things about it is there's a sad fact that for many people, if they could begin their cannabis treatment at the beginning, you know, if it was legal and they could get cannabis from their doctor, from their oncologist, from their specialist in the beginning, legally and safely, then, you know, they'd be in for a much better time of it, really.
And the other thing with that is they wouldn't be then asking us for help, which means we wouldn't have to break the law. And yeah. I don't want to be a criminal and break the law. It's the law that's wrong, not me.
You're right.
As it stands, we break the law every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you do.
Well, because I've been involved in this now for 18 years, someone asked me the other day, approximately how many offences do I think I've committed under the Misuse of Drugs Act? And it's a minimum of 100,000.
Wow.
That's a lot of crimes.
Yeah. A lot of lives saved as well, conversely.
Well, yeah, it's a difficult one to answer that, but again, at Bud Buddies, we don't use words like cure. We don't use words like patients either, because we don't have patients. We're not clinically qualified. Mm. We have people who we help, and we help them treat and manage their illness or serious disease with cannabinoids and extracts. And it might be being a bit pedantic, but I don't like the word cure because I think it gives people false hope. So I'd rather be accurate and use the word treatment. It can be a very effective treatment, but cure is not a word we use.
And I think that's a great approach because, to be fair, you know, I'm quite quick to slate the governments and the pharmaceutical companies, very much justified in my opinion. However, there is a risk on the other side of the spectrum that there is a lot of misinformation
yes.
about cannabis out there. And unfortunately, that hurts our cause. So I think, you know, that's a sensible approach to this.
It does. And a common myth out there is that 60 grams of cannabis oil will cure most cancers in 90 days. Now, that's not something I ever say or Bud Buddies say because it's inaccurate. But what we find is people who are trying to sell oil or people who are trying to scam people, that's the language they use because when you're vulnerable and you're suffering from cancer, that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that you're going to be cured in 3 months.
Yeah.
And we prefer to be accurate. It's a lot harder to be accurate and be honest and up front with people and say, look, you might not go into remission. But if you don't try it, you know what the outcome is.
And also, what's the worst that's going to happen by taking cannabis oil, right? I mean, there's a lot of pharmaceutical drugs. Well, most pharmaceutical drugs included in the side effects can be death, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're supplying cannabis oil to your child, there's a lot that can happen. Because if social services get involved, your child could be taken off you, made a ward of court, and then that child will not receive any more cannabis oil. That would be a death sentence being taken into custody and social services. And parents have enough to worry about that they're scared of losing their child to a serious illness. They shouldn't also be scared of losing them to social services and police involvement.
Yeah. Yeah. And the troubling thing is all of these risks, they're not directly associated with the plant itself.
No.
They are byproducts of the law, which
it's prohibition that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah,
time and time again you hear MPs and spokespeople citing different reasons as to why it should be illegal, and 90% of the time those reasons are because of the prohibition. It's just absolutely crazy that they're not even arguments.
It was many, many years ago, again, I think it was around about 2004, Howard Marks visited us at the Beggar's Belief in Rill. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, me and Howard smoking some, if I remember rightly, some purple haze at the time.
Nice.
And Howard made me realise that we were talking about the war on drugs. And Howard was saying that the war on drugs is ridiculous. You can't have a war on a plant, he said. And if people really think about it, a war on drugs is a war on people. And when your own government declares war on you, you have two choices. You can surrender or you can fight back. And that's when I realized that when I thought about it as a war, then you start thinking about strategies in war. And the first victim in any war is always the truth. And that's where propaganda comes in.
And it's interesting you mentioned the war on drugs. I read an interesting caption earlier today, which was, the war on drugs has caused more drugs to come into, let's say, America, for example, declare the war on drugs. Biggest legal policy failure probably in the existence of the universe, because suddenly drugs are flooded into the country. And today it's never been easier for anyone, teenagers, you know, to get completely unregulated products. And then you look again at things like the war on terror. OK, well, that has increased terrorism. So it's quite interesting. You know,
well, 2,500 years ago, Sun Tzu and the Art of War states that no country has ever benefited from a prolonged war. And that's true. Now, and this war on drugs worldwide has been going on since the 1970s when President Nixon announced the war on drugs. And here we are fighting it. It's ridiculous.
It is. And we've had a question come in from Billy Bonds. And we could be opening up a can of worms here, which is, why does the Home Office minister's husband have a license to grow cannabis?
Probably because that's the way the Tories are and that's the way politicians are. Hmm. What they preach to us and what we can have is different to them.
And I guess the background to that is, so the MP, I believe, is a lady by the name of Victoria Atkins.
And she's at the Home Office and she's the drugs minister, which is why she can't answer questions in the House in relation to cannabis, because her husband is involved in growing 45 acres of it, which all goes for export. We're one of the largest exporters of medical cannabis in the world, yet the people in this country can't access it.
Mm. I'm still left scratching my head when that United Nations report came out. I think we produce roughly 92 tons of cannabis last year legally, which Victoria Atkins' husband, who I believe is the managing director of British Sugar, he provides the cultivates the plants, the seedlings and the plants, then go on to GW Pharmaceuticals, who have Sativex and another cannabis-based product, which, of course, aren't available in the UK, or if they are, for to a very limited basis, and also at a hugely inflated price, of course.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. So thank you for the question, Billy. I'm sorry we don't have a sensible answer for you, because it's not a sensible topic, unfortunately.
It's hypocrisy.
Have you ever seen Sativex?
I haven't. So that's Sativex, is it?
Yeah. Each bottle of Sativex contains half a gram of a 1-to-1 oil. To be precise, there's 270 milligrams of CBD and 250 milligrams of THC in here in a 10 mil solution of propylene glycol and alcohol. It's applied under the tongue sublingually. It tastes like shit because of the alcohol content.
It does, it burns the mouth.
Does it?
Yeah, each bottle contains 100 sprays. If you want to try it, under the tongue.
Ooh.
Ugh. It's not pleasant.
It doesn't
at
taste
all.
Good at all. Yeah, it does have a burning.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's not nice at all.
It's not.
Mm. It's just typical of the pharmaceutical companies to take something nice and natural and ruin
it. And how much do they sell that for?
Well, the NHS is charged by GW Pharmaceuticals £125 for each vial of this. And effectively, the active ingredients in here are half a gram of cannabis oil. So that's £125 for half a gram of oil. You can hardly get it on prescription. It's only licensed in the UK for MS. And NICE have announced a while ago that it's not cost effective. They're saying there are cheaper drugs that can be prescribed in place of Sativex. And my view is that why? If people can't get access to this because it's too expensive to the NHS, then why can't people just grow a few plants and make their own? Why do they have to face up to 14 years in prison for trying to treat their own illness in the best way they see fit?
And I suppose the arguments will be, well, we need to ensure purity and pharmaceutical-grade medicine. But you will know this better than anyone else, because I believe part of what you do is to actually enable others to be able to become self-sufficient, grow and use their own medicine.
Yeah.
So I guess you've seen this firsthand, and people don't need pharmaceutical grade factories necessarily to be able to produce medicine that's going to help. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would, and that was one of our founding philosophies at Bud Buddies, was to empower people and teach people how to be self-sufficient. And even with the parents who contact us about their seriously and terminally ill children, we explain to them that their child needs continuity of supply. And the best way to ensure that is if the parents or the family come together, grow cannabis of the right strain, make extractions, and then administer it to their child. Because if they're relying on an organisation like Bud Buddies, one, we can't keep up with demand. Mm. And two, if anything happens to us, like we're arrested, held on remand, there could be an interruption to their supply. So if it's contained within the family and they're empowered to produce their own, we believe that under this current system of prohibition, it's the best approach.
Yeah.
And if they change the law, I mean, Schedule 1 is absolutely ludicrous, you know, to state in law that cannabis has no medical benefits whatsoever. And yet, as you say, you know, GW Pharma and UK being the biggest exporter of medicinal cannabis. If the law is changed and medicinal cannabis becomes available to people, there's always going to be the people that prefer to go down the pharmaceutical route. They're always going to be happy to go along to their doctor, get their pharmaceutical cannabis on prescription in pill form, and they're happy. But there should be options, you know. There should be an option where if you want to go down your own independent route, you know what works for you. The whole holistic experience of growing your own plants, you know, is beneficial on many levels. And the grow your own philosophy is not a threat to a pharmaceutical business. The industry will be huge when cannabis is legalized. The pharmaceutical industry is going to coin in, you know, but there are always going to be those people that prefer to grow their own, and they won't be a threat to any of that, you know. So,
yeah, you raise an interesting point, and I'm not convinced that they are that. I agree with you in the way that I think there's enough everyone to be happy within this.
Yeah.
However, I think that they do see it currently as a huge threat, and that's why they're pumping so much money into all various sorts of projects and lobbying and propaganda to try and stop it happening, because we see people are able to go from taking 40 pills a day, all with horrible side effects, down to taking, you know, a rice grain sized of oil that's going to alleviate all of that without the negative side effects. And one of my concerns is, particularly in the UK, as the momentum seems to be building around legalization, which is fantastic. You've got CBD being sold in Holland and Barrett now. Okay, the quality of the product may come into question. Mm-hmm. And it may be that this is somewhat encouraging misinformation.
Yeah.
However, undeniably, it's good that at least it means more people are talking about cannabis.
Yes, it
is. It is, but something to bear in mind is that the only reason CBD is available in the UK is because of a loophole in the law. CBD hasn't been permitted, it's just never been illegal. CBD itself is not an illegal drug, for want of a better term. But if you grow cannabis in this country to produce your own CBD, you're breaking the law because you're committing an act of cultivation. Mm. If you make your own CBD oil in this country, again, you're breaking the law, production. And the only way it's legal here is if it's made abroad and imported to the UK. So it's one of those weird situations. That in my view is indefensible, but there's a big danger. The MHRA could announce tomorrow, for example, that CBD is now a scheduled drug or a controlled drug, and that's going to create a lot of problems. Mm. But who knows what the Home Office is going to do?
Mm. Because as the CBD industry is booming in the UK,
but because it can.
There's an element of wild, wild west out there. So it's interesting.
Quality
to see.
Is a big issue out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of my concerns is if we do move towards legalization, I think a lot of us are so desperate to see it finally legalized. My concern is that the way that it's going to be implemented is going to be a very controlled way of the pharmaceutical companies having their own patented medicines that are going to be exclusively available via the NHS, and that it would still be illegal for families and individuals to grow and use themselves.
Raw cannabis.
And that's why for the last 2 years I've been living in Jamaica, because it's been legalized there now. As well as the legal system, they have 9 classes of license covering cultivation to transport, production and retail. But what I like about the Jamaica model is they went further. When they announced this new legal system, they also announced that each household can grow 5 plants without any interference from the police. You can carry 2 ounces of weed in public, again, without any fear of arrest. And a lot of police officers I've spoken to in Jamaica, they would hate to go back to prohibition, because a lot of police officers in Jamaica like a joint as well.
Sounds great. I can hardly imagine it. It must smell quite nice walking through the streets. You know, lots of nice fragrant smells coming through.
Yeah, definitely.
So how long have you lived in Jamaica for?
Just over 2 years now.
Okay. And was that one of the primary reasons for moving out there?
That was the only reason, yeah.
Plus the weather's a bit better, I hear.
It is, but as most of my days are spent in a lab or indoors, even though I've been there 2 years... I've never been for a swim in the sea. I always keep thinking, I'll do that tomorrow. I'll do that next weekend. There's always an email to answer or something else to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great place to be, but it's also got you know, a downside as well. It's still a very poor country. It has its downside. Hurricanes as well, you have to put up with, and it still has one of the highest murder rates in the world, so yeah, it's a special place.
Yeah, there's good points and bad points then.
Like everywhere.
Yes, very true, very true. And a shout out to Claire Hopwood, who says, you do an amazing thing, Jeff.
It's not through choice, Claire.
So in your book, the Medical Cannabis Guidebook, you talk about the extraction process and extracting the cannabinoids into an oil that would be used for the medicine. There's a couple of ways of doing this, I think. So you've got like an ethanol extraction. Do you have a CO2 extraction?
Yeah, there's various methods. Simply put, within the cannabis plant produces the cannabinoids and the terpenes and all its chemical compounds in what's known as the trichomes. And a lot of people refer to it as the resin. All the plant material itself, that's your cellulose. So simply put, you add the plant material to a solvent. You then extract the cannabinoids into the solvent, filter it, and then you evaporate off the solvent to be left with what people refer to as an oil. But it's probably more accurate to describe as a tar-like substance, because it's very thick and sticky. It's not, I don't really think of it as an oil, but very simply put, that's what you do. And that's why I tried to, in the book, write simple step-by-step guides so people could follow them and learn how to do it themselves and, as I said, empower people.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's good. And an interesting thing, I was speaking to Dr. Ethan Russo, who I know is also mentioned in your book in one of the earlier episodes. Something that intrigued me about the cannabis oil is, so we know that the THC is one of the key compounds that helps people in so many different ways. Also, it's the compound that produces the stoned high feeling. Talking to Ethan about this, one amazing thing that I didn't realize was, as you take the oil on a regular basis, you build up a tolerance.
Yes.
So, and I said, well, what do you mean by tolerance? Do you mean the drug becomes less effective? It was, no, the drug remains just as effective at treating your illnesses, but you build up a tolerance to the stoned effects.
Which
is just, you know, it's just an incredible plant. The more you find out about it, you know, it's put on this plant, on this planet for a reason, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's incredible. So we talked briefly about the cannabis clubs. So is Bud Buddies, do you work with the cannabis clubs? Because there seems to be a lot that have been popping up throughout the UK. How much involvement do you have with the clubs?
Very much depends on the club. There are some clubs who are basically just a Facebook page or group. We don't tend to get involved with them so much. But clubs that have physical premises and who have workshops and teach their club members how to be self-sufficient, they're the ones we're involved with. There's a very, very good club in Bristol, Bristol Compassion Club, another good one in Birmingham, one down here in Brighton. But we're getting more and more. But the club that Jan and I helped found here in Brighton, it's different to every other club in the UK, because what we've based it on is, if you like, the old model of the working men's clubs, like your British Legion club, where it's a democratic club. So every member has an equal say in that club. You have a secretary, a treasurer, and a chair. But at our club, we stand for election every 12 months. So if the membership did not like what we were doing, they can vote us off and replace us with other people who will run the club then as the membership see fit. And again, going back to the beggar's belief in 2003, one of my philosophies was that a club should be run by its members for benefit of its members. So that means that it's not one individual who basically is running a club, but it's more like a private business. And interestingly enough, in Spain, there was a recent ruling by the Supreme Court there that associations, if you like, private members clubs that have a vertical structure are illegal now. Whereas what they call clubs with a horizontal structure, like the one we've set up here, they are still permitted and legal. So it's interesting. It's evolving, shall we say.
That's interesting. And I know we talked about good old Jezza, Jeremy Kyle, earlier on. And did he come to one of the cannabis clubs?
Yes, he came up to the club in Teesside and he enjoyed it. It was different. And yeah, it was good to see him.
What was the end result, right? Because I remember a few years back watching the Jeremy Kyle show, and Jezza would just, you know, as soon as he found out someone smoked cannabis, his eyes would light up and go, "Oh, you smoke weed, do you? Okay, sit around the house doing nothing." And so the feelings I get from that was he, in the past, at least, he's been, you know, fairly
very
against cannabis. Has he maintained that? Did he have an open mind, at least?
When I was involved in that episode of the Kyle Files that was on last month, yeah, first time I met him, typical Jeremy Kyle. He's been doing his day show now for 12 years, very anti-weed. Everyone who consumes weed is a waster, blah, 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 and all the other propaganda that he comes out with. And interestingly enough, it took the producer of that program 3 months to persuade me to get involved, because at first I was like, "You're joking, aren't you, Jeremy Kyle? Fuck off." And it dawned on me one day that Jeremy obviously has the wrong impression of cannabis and people who consume cannabis. And I thought, well, if no one challenges that view he has, well, I can't really complain when he's moaning about people who consume cannabis. So eventually he decides to get involved in the program. And that's why I took him to see the mother of this teenage child who's a serving police officer, and he was surprised that a police officer was doing this as well. So after we finished filming, he did admit to me that he had a new perspective now on cannabis, and I like to think that we've played an important part, not just myself and Bud Buddies, but also the Teesside Cannabis Club as well, because he was surprised that, in his view, I was like, "Well, I'm going to a club with a load of stoners," and I was like, "Yeah, you are." But when he got there, he realised that, "Hey, these aren't the people who appear on my daytime show. These are just normal people," and I believe he saw the sense in it. And as I explained to him, is that the police have had their budgets cut by 20% due to austerity. Does he want his taxes paid to police officers to arrest people who are doing no harm, sitting around having a joint or even growing a few plants? Or does he want the police to spend their budget on crimes where there are victims? quite a few police forces now, they won't even turn up if your house is burgled. If no one's hurt and it's just a burglary, they'll give you a crime reference, but they won't even send anyone round. Yet they'll send police officers, some forces will send police officers round to someone who might be growing five plants for their own health. So it's like, you know, come on, guys, get serious. It's 21st century. If your budget's been cut, don't waste your limited resources on someone who's growing a few plants and there's no victim of their crime.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think, was it the Durham chief constable said that they have completely deprioritised cannabis? And that was quite some time ago. That
yeah.
was probably over a
that
year
was,
or so ago, I think.
Yeah, that was Police and Crime Commissioner Ron Hogg. And Arvin Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner of North Wales, has come out with a very similar stance as well. That, yep, the law's the law. However, they are having to prioritise their resources to where they can do most good. And Arvin Jones has said to me outside Parliament last October that he doesn't want to spend North Wales taxpayers' money on busting people for a few plants who aren't doing any harm. And I agree. I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And it's interesting one. I have also seen a lot of people that, perhaps like Jeremy Kyle, have only seen one side of cannabis, and they perhaps have a bit of a tainted perspective on it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, that's all they see.
The stereotypical
exactly.
stoner.
Yeah, exactly. So it's tough trying to break people out of that mould. And I think that could also be a risk where we see it being legalised. That could be an argument to say, well, we don't want people to grow it themselves because we acknowledge that it's a medicine. However, people shouldn't be able to grow that themselves because it will encourage people to become recreational users of cannabis, which I think is absolutely fine.
I could say, well, so what if it does?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather see someone smoking a joint than getting pissed and violent and smashing things up.
Also, I think, you know, if they regulated it and made it, you know, available in off licenses, I think Arvin Jones suggested, if we're looking at recreational use of cannabis rather than medicinal, everyone's for medicinal use, obviously, but the recreational use, if it's regulated properly, you have to be over 18 to purchase it, you know, and you can go and buy it from an off license. I think that basically removes a lot of the risk anyway. And many people, again, would prefer, from a convenience point of view, to just go down to their local store, buy some cannabis of, you know, whatever they want from some sort of menu, and go home and partake, rather than have to go to all the trouble of growing their plants.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite a time-consuming and careful operation to grow your own plants, especially in this climate, because quite often you have to do it indoors. So people would prefer to just go to the off license and pick up a little bag of weed for their weekend or whatever. It's not a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hope we can see it one day in the UK.
Yeah.
Really, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the revenue that they'd get from it would be tremendous. I think
there's that.
The last data available in Colorado, I think, was for November of 2017, $40 million just in the month of November alone. Someone extrapolated the data and did some fancy things to that.
But
it could be billions a month even for the UK.
Yeah, but the thing is, the UK government are already benefiting from taxes because, as you said, they're exporting 45... you know,
yeah.
numerous tons a year of medical cannabis. They're charging duty. GW Pharmaceuticals are paying taxes on that. I don't think the Tories want to see it legalized because they keep referring it to as a dangerous, harmful drug. The most harmful thing about cannabis is the prohibition of
yes,
it.
Yes, the law.
Absolutely. You're spot on with that. It's easy to forget that they are already profiting from cannabis.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they want to protect that monopoly.
Yeah, they do.
Of course they do, yeah. So
it's about control.
We're running out of time a little bit, but there's a few more shout-outs.
Sure.
We've got Sam Walker. Jeff is a legend. Not all heroes wear capes. Education is the key. Some good stuff. There's a lot of love for you out there, Jeff. I can absolutely see why. So I guess there's going to be a lot of people listening into this that want to be able to help in some way. It's going to vary. I'm sure some people have, you know, full-time jobs. They need to pay the bills and they're probably worried about getting caught up in something that could have an impact on that. But what would you both say to these people? You know, how can they best help and get involved if they want to?
Well, we have a new campaign, if you like, to help towards the general campaign of legalization of cannabis. The suffragettes, just over 100 years ago, women were fighting in this country for the right to vote. Ironically, in those days, they did have the right to give their children cannabis for their illnesses and what have you. Here we are 100 years later, we have the right to vote, but we don't have the right to give our sick loved ones cannabis. So we liked the movement of the suffragettes, obviously, and what they stood for and their tenacity in trying to get the law changed. And we've adopted that into the cannabis campaign. And we have come up with a new slogan of weeds, not words, rather than deeds, not words, where we are hoping to be more vocal in our, which is ironic because it's, you know, weeds, not words. But rather than just asking for permission, we're more demanding now. We are more demanding. And people who want to come along and help us on the 6th of July, we'll be there. Come along, be present, you know, support the campaign. Numbers matter. Obviously, the more people that come along, the better, really. So
that's the 6th of July. Is that outside Parliament again?
Yeah, that's outside Parliament again. Who knows?
Jeff, you looking for a hat trick getting arrested here? Or?
Well, maybe. I mean, it won't be through choice, but if the police want to arrest me on the 6th of July, they know where I'm going to be, and they know they'll have grounds to do it, and, yeah, bring it on. But I'd like to say to people out there as well is do what you can. And the reason prohibition is reasonably successful is because of fear. And I fully understand that if you've got young kids yourself, your job, your career, all these can be affected by a cannabis conviction. So a lot of people have to be careful in some ways. It's not because, you know, I'm brave or anything. It's just because I feel I'm in a unique situation. I have one daughter. She's in her early 30s. She's married. So if I get arrested or even put in prison for what I'm doing, it only affects me. Whereas other people have to think about, you know, their partners, their children. And I understand that. So it's a case of if you can't be on the front line, again, we're in a war, which we are in. You have your frontline troops. You have your support troops. You can have your catering corps. So everyone can play their part. And it's up to people to do what they can and what they feel they can do safely. But my view is all grow weed. There's plenty of sick people out there who need it. And if you know how to grow weed, well, teach someone to be self-sufficient and independent. And I think that's a great way for people to get involved and help. But at the end of the day, people have to put their own families first.
Spot on. That's great. Alrighty, well, that has been a very insightful and enjoyable session. So, Jan and Jeff, thank you so much for your time. I think on behalf of everyone, thank you so much for all of the work you do, for doing the hard fight. It is very much appreciated. You guys are bloody awesome.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Take care.
Right. Thanks, everyone, for listening.